doing you bird brain.
What do? Backflips? You jump up there in a silly suit? What do?
You go bam! I want you to play that.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Fast Freddy back in action on the Fast Freddy Rocks Youngstown podcast. I am here with Joe Danier, and I think today we're just going to be shooting a breeze here this afternoon, talking a little bit about everything.
Celebrating the Browns.
Yes. Oh, yeah, of course, man. We got our Browns gear on. We're ready to go. We're ready to rock the house. And isn't this a great season with the Cleveland Browns?
It totally is.
I mean, this is knock on wood. Hopefully everything goes as planned, but we have not had a season like this in I can't tell you how long. It is just
since I was a
fantastic.
Kid, like, really?
Oh yeah. Think about it. If you know, so when the Browns came back, when did we come back? 1999, right? Yep. So in 22 years, we have not had anything like this in 22 years.
We got close. Like Derek Anderson took us there close sometimes.
But not like this.
Not at all.
Not like when we're 3-1 and the Steelers have a 3-game losing streak.
Yeah.
And, you know, Big Ben is on his last legs. Now, I am really enjoying that because of all the pain and misery and suffering that Big Ben has caused us over the years. Finally,
yes.
Finally, at least they let me enjoy it that much. And it's good to see the Steelers fans suffering because they haven't done that for so long. And now they're in new territory. And I think it's going to take the Steelers a little bit of time to rebuild. It's going to be a few years before they get back to where they were.
Yeah, I think they should be cycling Haskins in early to give him some overlap with Ben because he's going to suffer if they don't.
Oh, it's crazy, yeah. But it feels so good finally to be a Browns fan and to see like the Steelers in disarray. It's a completely different territory that we have been in the last two decades. In the last two decades alone, we have suffered. Big Ben was the winningest quarterback in our stadium. You know, Kevin Stefanski now, to show you how we're turning the corner, has more wins than the previous three coaches combined.
Oh, man, that's so bad. Oh, and I will tell, remind this, that those Steelers fan assholes took such joy in beating us down. So,
oh, yeah,
we got like 10 years to enjoy this, guys, all right?
Let's hope. If my health and everything holds out that long, that's the big question. Will I be able to hold up this long? That'll be my luck, you know? We'll finally get to the Super Bowl, and I'll drop over from a heart attack. That's what I'm worried about. Yeah, when my dad passed away, the Steelers lost and the Browns won on that rare day, and he was happy that
there
day.
You go.
So what can I say? What can I say? But
so, what do you think about the awful accuracy last week, though? Is that disconcerting?
No, we'll be all right.
Yeah.
We'll be all right. You know. I saw a funny meme going around on Facebook, and it's like this big fat slob. No, it wasn't me, but it was another big fat slob, like laying on the couch with no shirt on and his belly sticking out, you know, and he's bitching about Mayfield, you know, and says, yeah, this is the guy that's sitting there putting down this guy that's out there playing.
Put me in, coach. Yeah,
this guy can barely get up and get a sandwich, and he's in there, oh, that bum, you know, we got to get rid of Baker. He's got to go.
Oh, that's so funny.
Let's see who's checking in. Our buddy Keith Sturgeon is checking in, and Keith says it's freaking awesome. We got to get Keith on the show. You know, Keith is an artist, and I'll tell you, he's been picking up a lot of steam. He's been getting some interviews, and he's been featured in some magazines now, and his artwork is really starting to take off. So at some point here in the near future, we'll definitely get
that
him
dude
on.
Some publicity. That's awesome.
Yeah. So he's doing some really good work. And I see Rosemarie is checking in here this today. Hi, Rosemarie. She's probably drinking a margarita right now as we speak. that's all that's been going on with me. Bike nights are finally coming to an end. And boy, it's been a long summer. It has been a long summer. I wish it would be longer. You know, I would like it to continue on for as long as it can. But, you know, for bike nights and everything, it starts wearing me down.
Yeah,
you know, when you start in May,
when
you start in May and you go all the way till October.
Yeah.
You know,
but this weekend I'm going up to Cedar Point. It's going to be like 80 degrees. Like,
I know.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Now, Saturday, though, it's supposed to rain.
Yeah.
Saturday is supposed to rain. Sunday's supposed to be real nice.
Beautiful.
But you know, that's all I've been up to, really. You know, the radio station, things are going good at Y103, and I'm starting to settle in finally. I'll tell you, it was a lot more work. It's a lot more work. And my whole thing is, and I've been telling this story to everybody to listen to it, is being off of work for a year and a half and not really doing anything, and then you get back into the groove. It's not easy. It is not easy. You know, when you get that little taste of retirement,
and it gets ripped away from you, man.
Just like that. When I was out there, you know, even last summer, you know, I mean, I was in better physical shape. I'm getting this belly here a little bit, not a little bit, a lot, but, you know, I mean, I was out hiking all the time. You know, last summer I was at Nelson Ledges. I was at Mill Creek Park. I was getting in 5 miles a day in Mill Creek Park and enjoying it. You know, Nelson Ledges, Beaver Creek State Park. I was down there, just all these places, getting out there, getting that fresh air and moving around. And then when I wasn't doing that, I could lay on the couch in my sweatpants and watch Game Show Network and start day drinking, and, you know, margaritas at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Nobody tells you no.
Yeah.
Nope.
And, you know, and then fishing. And I did more fishing than I ever did. And last summer I caught more fish and some of the biggest fish I ever caught in my life last summer. And that was nice. And motorcycle riding like crazy. And, you know, it's just one thing after another. And then all of a sudden you got to go back to work.
Well, you didn't wade in. You like went from nothing to like over full time, like triple time.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Yes. You know, and once I started back in Y103, you know, Lynn had retired and, you know, we did kind of like a complete re-imaging of the radio station. And, you know, there was just so much work that had to be done to get it where.
Well, and your night and weekend stuff too. I mean, yes, you got blasted.
That didn't stop.
Right.
That didn't stop at all. Now we did back off the podcast a little bit, but only because I was so slammed.
Right.
But you know, now that we're settling in the fall and we have a lot of good guests coming up next week, ladies and gentlemen, next week is going to be a blast. One of my favorite people. He's a complete wild man. And when we get together, it's like no holes barred. Our buddy Basil, the comedian, is going to be here.
Nice.
And he's going to be live in the studio. And he has two shows at the Funny Farm coming up on Saturday, a week from Saturday. And it's going to be fun to hang with Basil.
What kind of alcohol should I have for that? Because I want to get you guys liquored up. It's got to be.
You know what? I don't think Basil's that big of a drinker.
No. Okay.
No.
All right.
No. But, you know, you could.
Buffalo Trace is over there, and that's a special occasion kind
of
bourbon.
Right. Whatever you have
all
over
right,
there.
That's cool.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. It'll be, it's going to go.
On
no
its own, it'll stand.
Right. So next week, you'll definitely want to do that. And I got a couple of our band friends have a few benefits coming up, and we're going to have them stop by and talk about what they've got going on. You know, a couple of the guys that we had on when we were doing the Battle of the Bands earlier this summer. So, you know, we're going to do a quick update with them. And, you know, there's two benefits coming up next week, and we'll cover that and, you know, whatever else. But I do have a lot of good people that are going to be coming down in the next month or so. So we're really going to get back in the groove.
Yeah, I finally got to see Peppermint Studios. I've lived in this valley my whole freaking life.
Oh, you did?
First time I was there.
Well, that's a guy I want to get on is Gary Ramey.
Okay.
Yeah, I see Gary every Saturday out at the radio station.
Okay.
And he's got some great stories. I mean, he was Mr. Rock and Roll. You know, he put it all together. You know, I mean, we've had all these guys in here, you know, like last year with, you know, Steve Acker from Law and Frank Sesich and all those guys in that era, they all recorded at Peppermint Productions. Yep. There was so many, it was like the center of creativity and recording music in that period of time. And the fact that Gary is still going strong and he's a funny guy and a clever guy and a witty guy. He's got this like dry wit about him that is really cool. So, you know, we're going to get him on here.
What's cool about it is like we have all this digital equipment.
Yeah.
That stuff is analog. That's like a whole another level of audio equipment.
And people love the analog. It's making a big comeback, you know, because there's just certain things. There's a certain warmth with that, with the analog, and, you know, even just the way you record it, you know, you have that, you know, that the wide tape. Hubcap Hunter is checking in. Hubcap, you got to get down here. I've been trying to get Hubcap on the show. you know, Hubcap, what are you doing sitting at home, man? You should be on the show, you know. But yeah, Hubcap's been posting some wrestling stories and things like that. And we have I would really like to get Hubcap in because, you know, we get Casey and everybody in that has, you know, those stories. And Hubcap's got a whole list of great stories as well.
Cool.
Especially some of his wrestling stories and that sort of thing, you know, with the Iron Sheik and King Kong Bundy. And
takes me back, man.
one of the best wrestling stories I have is me and Hubcap were hosting some kind of show. I think it was like the Divas of Wrestling. And it's like, you know, kind of the minor league wrestling, you know, house show, low rent kind of thing.
Right.
And, you know, and somebody, they have wrestlers that look like other wrestlers. And it's like their brother. I remember they had this guy that kind of looked like Stone Cold Steve Austin, but they called him Even Colder. And it was supposedly his brother. And
they got cover bands for wrestlers.
Yeah, kind of. almost. Yeah, it's something like that. But anyways, we were out there and we had this show going, and they had like a Divas match, and it was something about, you know, Hubcap was over there giving them a hard time, and I was their manager, and, you know, we're like, you know, pushing each other around and stuff, and I'm chasing them out of the ring and that kind of thing. So then he goes, hit me in the head with this chair. He goes, do a headshot and hit me in the head with this chair. And I said, do you really want me to do this? Because I'm not even like one of them guys that likes to box around or right. something, because you think, oh, okay. Oh, hey, that guy hit me hard. Now I'm pissed or vice versa or whatever, you know?
Oh no.
And, so he says, hit me in the head with this chair. I said, are you sure? He goes, yeah. He goes, you know, you can hit me, you know? And I said, I'm not sure if I want to do that. No, go ahead. Hit me. So we're out there and we're going back and forth, and I get this chair and I whack him over the head. Next thing you know, he goes out. I knock him.
You knocked unconscious.
And he was wearing a baseball cap, and the little thing on the baseball cap went right into his head, and he starts bleeding. And this looked like something from the cover of a wrestling magazine, because he starts bleeding down his face and he's got the whole spider web thing. This looked like a cover from a wrestling magazine. And I was like, oh no. And Kevin Sullivan, who is known as the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan comes up and goes, guys, that was the best chair shot I have ever seen in my life.
Look at that.
And it turned out, because it was real. And at Packard Music Hall, they had these folding chairs that were solid wood.
Oh, no.
And they had like a piece of pipe that ran there through the bottom of the chair. These were like the heaviest, dutiest, all metal and wood folding chairs that you could find. And I whacked them over the head. Then I start feeling bad because he was out of it. And their medic was this crazy dude from Vietnam that was traveling with them. And so this guy was like kind of strange. And the next thing you know, he just gets some crazy glue out and glues Hubcap's head back together.
That's cool.
And away we went. But that was one of our craziest ones there.
Yeah, the chair thing's supposed to be like a light aluminum chair, like that has a breakaway cuts in it, you know? And let me give the phone number if you guys want to call in, 330-595-1600. It's written at the bottom of the screen if you're watching on YouTube, but 330-595-1600.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man, we were really in with the wrestling, you know, big time. But I was always a wrestling fan from day one. From when I was a real little kid, I always loved pro wrestling. And my son, Matt, he is probably like one of the biggest wrestling experts out there. He could probably start his own wrestling podcast easily. I mean, he knows every fact, every figure, every match he can tell you about. But I remember getting started in wrestling when I was a little kid. And we had a black and white TV, and we had, you know, the rabbit ears that were on the set.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think we had a bullseye, you know, and for people that don't know what that is, it's like these antennas where you had to try to tune the picture in through this snowy fuzz.
See, we were fancy. We went.
Yeah, we weren't quite at that. This is before that. You know, I was thinking of that the other day. No, today I was talking to some guy and I was like, do you realize, like, you know, I heard like some kind of statistic about, you know, like the first color broadcast and things like that. And I was sitting there saying, I know we're old, but that happened in our lifetime. Yep. When you see all this modern technology, even that we have in this studio with everything that's in here and with, you know, how we're watching on phones and, you know, even like with Hulu and every network now has their own network and Apple Plus and yep. Peacock and all this other crazy stuff that was out there. We're going back to like three channels.
Right.
Three channels. Right. That's what you had on this TV. And when color TV came out, it was a big thing. And it happened in our lifetime. It's like, holy shit. How did, you know, and when you see where we're at now and from where we started, you're just almost scratching your head. Like, how the hell did that happen?
Right.
You think about how fast that came along.
Yeah.
And the one cool thing though, is that I got to say that radio has stood the test of time though. I mean, the competition is out there and it's not what it used to be, but there's still like 90% of Americans still listen to radio every week, you know? And it's just like, you know, we have stood that test of, now I'm going to jinx it. No, but you know, you think about it. Radio has been around for 100 years. Radio has been around almost for 100 car. Years yeah. and it's still something that, you know, maybe it's not what it used to be, but what is, but it's still there. Radio is still there after 100 years.
Crazy.
You know, and I always find that amazing. I find that amazing. It's almost like kind of like the poor man's entertainment or whatever, the old go-to, you know, right. It's that old comfortable pair of shoes that, you know, okay, you're just going down to the grocery store or whatever. Or you're driving to work 15, 20 minutes. Yeah. Hit it on, see what's going on, and hear a song.
From transistor radios that the guy with the single tiny speaker, little antenna, all the way.
But now,
today.
Though, actually, we are back because look, this is even smaller than a transistor.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's not like back in the day when we would be, you know, late at night, you'd be listening to hear, see if you could get in Detroit, see CKLW or, you know, WNBC or WABC in New York and hearing Wolfman Jack on there or right. WoWo in Fort Wayne and all these radio stations. You'd be listening in and going, oh man, that is so cool. You know, and that was really something. Now I can only imagine what it would have been like to have this back in the day. I don't know if that would have been a good thing or a bad thing. I you know, there's a certain magic to radio that still was there today. Not like it used to be, but especially back then when this was all like really brand new and when they were just starting to play this music on the radio and then all the music was brand new, you know, think about that. You had this little radio and the next thing you know, all this creativity, probably the golden age of music when you really look at it, when you really think about it, when you think about Motown and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all this stuff that was coming out and all these crazy one-hit wonders that were just rolling along. And you're just sitting there going, all this stuff was just like bombarding you. You were just bombarded with it. Yeah. You know, okay, here's all, you know, Stevie Wonder and the Supremes and the Temptations and, you know, Jackie Wilson and Wilson Pickett. But then, and then here comes the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you're just sitting there. And then, you know, then the album rock started coming on. And then, you know, it was the, you know, Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin. And, you know, all this stuff was just brand new sounds that were never heard before. And you're just sitting there going, whoa. And it's just coming to you out of that little transistor radio.
Let me ask you this. Let's just say you're a kid and you get into your time machine and you come up to 2021. Now, mm-hmm. Are you disappointed that it's not the Jetsons? Or are you thinking that this stuff is the Jetsons as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I think you're looking at it like it's the Jetsons. Yeah.
Your phone? What?
Yeah, I think it is. But I never, you know, I'm an old fart now. I don't give it much thought, you know. I'm just still lamenting in the old days, you know. I get by, but what I get by with, and you know, I'm not too wrapped up in all that stuff. But anyways, getting back to the wrestling. So yes. Here we are. We got this, you know, TV, And it was black and white and probably a portable. And we would have these little antennas. You had the rabbit ears and you had the bullseye to try. And you would get three channels. In Youngstown, it was 21, 33, and 27. And if you were lucky, now, if you had an antenna, you would be able to get in Cleveland and Pittsburgh and an antenna with a rotor.
See, yes, we were never that aerial, fancy. Baby.
Yeah, we never had the aerial, you know. Maybe a bow tie. That was another thing. You had the rabbit ears, the bow tie, and whatever else you had.
Yep.
So, yeah, the now, rabbit ears.
We had a CB in our basement, too. So we had that super long antenna that had for the CB. Uh-huh. You used to be able to listen to truckers on the interstate. Yeah. That was the funnest thing as a kid. Listen to those guys swear over the airwaves. It was so cool.
Yeah, right, right. So now you have that, and you got this black and white TV, and the picture's kind of snowy. It's the picture's fuzzy, especially where we live. You know, I mean, we live right on Poland Avenue, which is like one of the lowest spots in the valley. You know, it's, I mean, we were right there, right by the mill and right there by the river. And so the problem with that was, now we lived like almost across the street from Channel 21's tower. So anything on Channel 21's tower is beaming right into our house. You know, we probably didn't even need a TV. You could watch it on the toaster. But the problem with that was, now you had Channel 27 was up on, and still is, on Midlothian.
Right.
And you had Channel 33, which is still up there in the same spot off of Midlothian. Now, the problem with that was we were in what they would call the signal shadow. So you had the tower, and the tower's beaming out. But if you're right underneath the tower, the waves go over top of you. And so we didn't get any of those channels. We, until they got the bigger tower on Channel 27, and when they kicked up something on Channel 33, we had a heck of a time. So we were almost relinquished to watching Channel 21. So NBC was like our main thing.
So out of your three, you got one.
Yeah, so out of our three. But then we were able to get in some of these other stations through the fuzz, you know, Channel 61 in Cleveland, Channel 43 in Cleveland, Channel 23 in Akron was there for a while. So we would get all these different TV channels, and you would watch it through the snow. And one of the things we would always watch, Channel 9 in Steubenville was another one. And, you know, the main thing we were looking for was pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And I think they called it big time wrestling back in the day and studio wrestling back in the day. And for some reason, I was immediately attracted to pro wrestling from day one. And I could just remember watching. I always wanted to go to Cobo Arena in Detroit because that's where they had some of the matches, man. I mean, that's where Bobo Brazil would take on Pompero Purpo, the Argentine wild man. And you had all those guys, Dynamite Dominic DiNucci and Bruno San Martino and all those great wrestlers. And you would watch them through the snow. And so it even made it look even more real because, right. Okay, you can imagine back in the day what it was like with the telecast looked like. You know, they just had some fixed cameras up in the stands practically.
They were this somewhere. Big anyway, right?
Yeah, right, right. And you had 15,000 people packed into these big arenas in like Detroit, and you would see that, and it would just be like, oh, it was just so good. And so then that's how I really started watching wrestling. And then, of course, you know, when my little brother come along, I would practice some of the moves on him and stuff, you know, the face claw and, you know, raking their eyes and whatever else that you would do.
Right.
And so I just started following wrestling at that age. And then, you know, I buy the wrestling magazines, and then, you know, a couple of times I was lucky enough to go to Girard High School gym. That's where they, Dynamite Dominic DiNucci used to wrestle there a lot.
Seriously,
and then Bruno San Martino. And then Stamp Auditorium was another big one. And then when I got a little older and I was able to drive and stuff, then I can remember going a lot to Struthers Fieldhouse and Stamp Auditorium. They used to have wrestling matches at Stamp Auditorium. And it was just, you know, it was just so much fun. And then I just stuck with it. And then once I got into the radio, then, you know, we would always sponsor the matches, or I would be out emceeing or whatever. And so probably from like 1980 on, whenever there was a wrestling match in Youngstown, I was there totally involved there in some way, you know. As a matter of fact, the first parody song I ever wrote was a wrestling parody song. and it was the David Allen Co., Waylon Willie, and me. And we made it. And I did this with Mike Sayers from the Mecca Band. And we did a song called Hulkster Piper and Me. And that was like the first thing. And I was like, you know, the three baddest guys in the arena were Hulkster, Piper, and me, you know. And it was like, you know, Snuka would fly from the top rope and Papa would read poetry, but the three baddest men in the arena were Hulkster, Piper, and me. And that's nice. That's where my parody song. It's,
you know, a lot of those old school wrestlers in that era right there, they even got in like movies and television shows. Oh, yeah. They were
Hulkster
big.
And Piper and all them guys. Yeah. And well, look at The Rock. I mean, The Rock, just unbelievable where he went through from wrestling, you know, where he wound up. But anyway, so then I take my son, and he was a big wrestling fan through that all. And, you know, we would always be backstage or whatever. And we met just about every single one. And, you know, back in the day when the security was looser and stuff, he could bring his friends and it, you know, would all pile into the van and go down there, and I'd be interviewing all these guys, and we'd be backstage, and you know, they'd be signing and taking pictures. Stone Cold, cool. All those guys, man, Undertaker, you name it, they were all there. And they were all so nice to the kids. And then we got a ton of different stories about, you know, wrestling throughout the years here in Northeast Ohio and Western Pennsylvania, like the time Jake the Snake Roberts got busted for DUI in Girard. He got all liquored up at the rib burn off and mooned the crowd and went out of there. And, you know, and he got arrested and just all kinds of goofy stuff like that. You know, Mick Foley, you know, met him a lot of times. We did a lot of stuff with him, you know. They were just great guys. Owen Hart. I mean, I'll tell you, Owen Hart was one of the nicest guys. You know, when my son and his friends would be there, he'd just come over to them and shake their hands and talk to them and everything. And, oh, I'll tell you another good one. We're at, and to show you how these guys are, we were at Beegley Center, and the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, woo, he was there. And I think he wrestled Shawn Michaels that night. And so at the end of the night, Flair is standing there. I mean, it's Ric Flair. He's standing there next to the ring. He just got out, did his thing. He's standing there with the Ric Flair, the Nature Boy robe and everything. And he sees some friends of his. And he says, hey, come on down here, you guys. He was looking for him. That's why he stayed out. He was looking for him. He goes, hey, come on down. Then a couple of the security guards are giving him a hard time, and they won't let him, these people come down. He's like, hey, these are friends of mine. He goes, I'm the main event here, you know, and it kind of went bad,
right.
You know? And so, you know, then some words were spoken and everything else. And, you know, it got a little, you know, shaky there. So
and
then,
you think it was real? You think it was a real, like,
oh yeah, yeah. No, I was standing right there.
Okay.
Oh, I was standing right there because me and my son were supposed to meet Flair, and he was supposed to get a picture and everything. And I'll tell you what. So then they just kind of separated everybody, and they got Flair out of there and whatever. And a couple weeks later, we get this package in the mail for my son. It's an autographed picture of Ric Flair and his complete DVD set, or might have been tapes at the time, whatever it was. And it's sent to him.
That's cool.
And, good, you know, dude. And that's how them guys really were. All those guys would be like that with their fans. You know, I don't know how it is now because we haven't done anything in a long time, but back then they were like really all about their fans. They really were. Those guys were really all about that. But so that's how I kind of, you know, got started in wrestling, how we got on that track. I'm not really sure.
I've seen a lot of like lady wrestlers here lately. So it must be a completely different thing.
Yeah. Now they're more into the divas and stuff, but I'll tell you, wrestling will, you know, like music. I don't think, you know, music will ever be like it was, you know, in the golden age now, if you want to call it that. And that's the same thing with wrestling. When they finally peaked there, when they called the Attitude Era, with Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker and The Rock and, you know, New Age Outlaws and you know, all those guys, when that era, the Attitude era, when it was really racy and it was, you know, it was starting to get like more adult and, you know, and some of the storylines were out there and, you know, it was a little bit, you know, borderline PG-13, maybe right. A little bit beyond. I think when it hit that point, it was so big, it was unbelievable. I mean, Monday Night Raw would sell out everywhere. Monday Night Raw actually got its start in the Youngstown area. One of the very first ones they did was at Struthers Fieldhouse. One of the first Monday Night Raws was at Struthers Fieldhouse. And it was a great day. I can remember, you know, it was just such an electric atmosphere. And they were getting ready to do one of the big pay-per-views in Pittsburgh. A short time after that. So they had the WWF, when it was WWF at the time, their blimp was flying over Struthers and it was crazy. That's you know, cool. And then when they come on, it was like, yeah, live from Struthers, Ohio. And you could find clips out there from that.
I'm surprised at how many concerts and events like that happened at Struthers Fieldhouse.
Oh, right? Yeah. Somebody should do a nice little thing about Struthers Fieldhouse. You could do a nice story, I think, about that. A little history of Struthers Fieldhouse. Let's see. Alice Cooper played there. Sly and the Family Stone and Joe Walsh played there. Although I guess it got so rowdy, they didn't let Sly play. There was a lot of Shinedown and those bands played there. Michael Stanley. I think for a lot of people of a certain age, probably Michael Stanley at Struthers Fieldhouse might have been their first big concert, you know, seriously? Their real concert. Dang. Michael Stanley at Struthers Fieldhouse. Alice Cooper played there in like 1982. Oh, by the way, if you missed the Alice Cooper concert, you missed a good one.
You were there?
That show was really, really good. Alice Cooper still has it, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you that. Alice Cooper's voice is still good, although he's never been one of those screamers. So that probably helped a lot too. You know, he wasn't that kind of a singer, you know. And the show is still great. Props and, you know, everything. A stage show and monsters and guillotines and straight jackets. That's cool. And naughty nurses and monsters and inflatable giant babies. And I mean, Alice really does it. Alice really does it. And believe it or not, that was the first time I was down at the Youngstown Amphitheater for a show. That place is cool. That is a gem of Youngstown. You would think you were at Blossom or anyplace else. And the background, you know, they light the bridge up, you know, so you're looking down at the river and then you see the bridge is all lit up. And then like the Covelli Center is all lit up. And then you turn back and you see the Youngstown like skyline. It's, you know, you almost have to look around and go, wow, I can't believe this is in Youngstown.
Yeah. Right.
And I think they do an awesome job down there. That was the first show I was at. And boy, it was a good one. I'm bummed out, though, that I didn't go to the Rolling Stones.
I am Cleveland.
No, they were in Pittsburgh. Monday night, I think it was. Yeah, it was Monday night. And my problem was a couple of the people that I wanted to go with weren't fully committed and they talked me out of it.
Okay.
I was on the fence. I needed somebody to say, get your ass in the car, dude. It's the Stones in Pittsburgh. We're going. It's going to be great. You know, and the two people, my buddy Jay Bird, he was wishy-washy. And Sandra Miller was wishy-washy. They were both wishy-washy. They were on the fence. My one buddy, Vince, he was there, you know, but they left at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon and there was no way I could get out.
Right.
And so then I just started making excuses of why I shouldn't go and I should have went. That's all I got to say. And then when I start seeing everybody's reports and things they were posting on Facebook and everything.
Wasn't it like $500 a ticket? Wasn't it?
There was some there. Yeah. I don't know about those kind of tickets, though. I think the $500 tickets, you know what they were doing with the $500 tickets? They were getting people out of the upper deck and putting them down there to make sure it looked like it was full is what they were doing.
Okay.
You know. But I concert ticket pricing anymore, it's so crazy. I don't know what's what. And I think a lot of people get confused too, because now this is something you should do. This is right there here. You want to do your, you want to do your consumer report or something. What you want to look at is how these people work these tickets and ticket scalpers and secondary ticket sellers and how they sometimes get ahead in the search engines. Why are they first? And I think a lot of people get on there and they see these different places and they don't realize it's a secondary market and they buy tickets on that and they look real. Like, you know, you could type in Alice Cooper Covelli Center and it'll take you to this website that looks like, you know, a ticket site. And all of a sudden all their tickets on there are twice as what they cost. But I think there's a lot of shenanigans going on in ticket sales, especially for big shows. And I don't know, you know, with StubHub, I don't know if they're, how people are getting those tickets or whatever, but you would be the guy that would be able to get to the bottom of this and figure it out as to what's going on with what kind of matrixes they might be working, or how are they getting past
You know what?
They buy all these tickets? I mean, how could you go? And this has happened to me more than one time. You're waiting in line, tickets go on sale 10 o'clock Tuesday morning,
sold out,
and you go there and there's not a ticket left.
Yeah.
But then you go out in the parking lot and there's a million of them on Facebook for twice or on StubHub for twice the value. Yep. And then I'm wondering, okay, are the artists involved in this in some way? Could they be selling these $30 tickets, realizing like, okay, we buy all these tickets for $30 a piece. Now the show's sold out. All these tickets are worth $70. And now we sell them and we're getting twice for what we got. I don't know.
Right.
But there's something shady and there's something fishy and there's something going on with buying concert tickets, especially for big shows. And you got to be the guy to get to the bottom of that. How does Ticketmaster work? How do all these secondary ticket places work? How do they know who gets in line first? How can you be standing there at 10 o'clock in the morning and be the third person in line and not get two nosebleed tickets for $70?
Right. Yeah. You know? And I doubt that, you know, maybe even half of the inventory hits the general public before it gets scooped up by one of these people who gets first dibs at it.
Yeah.
Cause I remember you go to Kaufman's and you stand in line and like Metallica tickets for one. We got there at like 4 o'clock in the morning. We're the fifth people there and we got tickets, right? That's the way you did it.
Right.
Now and you go online and like you hit the button when it goes on sale and it's like, sorry, there's no tickets left.
Right.
Come on, how could that be?
Yes. No, there's something shady going on
for
there.
Sure.
I don't know if it's you know, with the artist, if it's with Ticketmaster, if it's with, you know, how these secondary ticket buyers got some kind of scam going
I bet Ticketmasters are funding somehow these third parties and they just dole it out to their other company to get those better.
Well, you know what? And that's another thing now too. If you see a lot of the secondary tickets are now on Ticketmaster. So, I mean, so doesn't it behoove them to, you know, okay, they make the show a sellout. And if you really want to go, now maybe they scooped up the tickets themselves. Maybe Ticketmaster bought the tickets. And now all of a sudden, those $35 tickets are now worth $80.
That's it.
You know,
it's good business, but terrible for people who go to concerts.
I don't know what's going on there, there is something going on. And they're so secretive. And this whole thing about the way it operates is, that's something you got to crack.
Yeah.
That would be a good one.
I've heard it from more than one artist that they won't do a show if Ticketmaster is doing the distribution on it because they don't trust them either.
And it's really hard not to because they're so big.
That's right.
You know, they're so big that you almost have to do it or else. But look at back in the day. Like you said, you would either go camp out, National Record Mart or whatever, and you would camp out, and you knew if you got up to the cash register first and laid your money there, you were going to be in the front row.
Right.
But that doesn't happen anymore. And then they used to have the Belkin Club, and if you were in the Belkin Club where you would pay a certain amount of money every year to be in the Belkin Club, you would be assured, like throughout the year, that you would be in the first 50 rows, 20 rows, whatever. So you had the Belkin Club. And then when they used to do the tickets where you would send them your check and they would draw 20,000 people, however many tickets, and they would draw that many people And then the rest of the people, they would send you your money back. And that's how you got your tickets.
Wow.
But there's some kind of goofy stuff going on now. Now that it's all computerized and there's people that are figuring out all kinds of ways. And also too, the artists have done this. Like you say, you got these $500 tickets for the Rolling Stones, or you got these, you know, now the artists want to sell you those seats. The artists are looking at that going, wait a minute. If somebody's going to pay $300 on StubHub to a ticket scalper, why don't we just charge $300?
That's it, right?
And then
we'll buy those in wholesale and sell them ourselves.
Yeah. So they get those tickets. And now you're in the VIP club, or you're buying a VIP package. Some of these tickets that these people sell for these VIPs, it's crazy. You know, you get like a laminate and you get like a picture. And now I seen some of these bands were doing the picture and they were behind plexiglass because of the COVID, and you would stand there and there's your picture.
Oh yeah.
You know, then they give you like a vinyl album or something and a laminate, and then they charge you like $1,000. And you're sitting there going, why would you soak your biggest fans? Because the people that are going to pay that are your biggest fans. Those are the guys you should go out of the way and say, hey, listen, man, you know, if you have a fan club and say, you know, our fan club is going to get up there, and since you are such a diehard fan, we're not going to charge you $1,000 to meet us. You're going to meet us for free.
That's it.
But, you know, that's not how it works. Now, if I was running the show, that's how it would be.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Jay Bird. Yeah. Michigan. Yeah. Kiss is coming to Michigan, and we're going to go up there this time, but Jay Bird's one of the guys that talked me out of it. He had no enthusiasm, and he didn't care if he went or not. And then when he saw our buddy Vinny and everything and started seeing all that stuff, and then he was like, oh yeah, we should have went. Oh, I don't care if I go or not. No big deal for me. So
we'll catch him next time.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the Stones, we'll see. We'll see. But I was really kind of bummed out that I didn't go. After it sunk in, and then I start seeing the pictures and people were, you know, posting videos from the show and stuff. And I'm like, what am I thinking? Thanks, Jay Bird. I'm not gonna listen to you anymore. Oh yeah. Let's see. Hubcap was the man. He was my neighbor for a long time. He's a nut. Yes, he is. We'll have to get Hubcap on here. That's from Fred Bear. Yeah, Jay Bird checking in. Christina, my neighbor from down the street, was talking about the antennas where you would put foil on it too. You know, you could jerry rig it a little bit and maybe add something on with aluminum foil and,
you know, look as ghetto as you could possibly be.
You know. And yeah, let's see. TJ's talking about Uriah Heep. That was a good band, Uriah Heep. You don't hear from these bands anymore, you know. But that's because we're old. And some of these bands, let's face it, Uriah Heep, when was that? 1972, maybe 73, Easy Living. I mean, that's kind of crazy when you start thinking about that, man. When you start looking on how time is flying by. Where were we? I think, who were we talking to? I was somewhere. And there was somebody there. Oh, I think my sister was there and this other guy. And my sister, I forget how old she is. She's younger than me, but this guy was asking her, well, do you know this song or do you know that song? Have you heard of this? Or and she's just like, no, no. Yeah. Let's see here. Look, we could do it in November. No excuses after seeing Vinny's videos. Yes, I messed up. Yeah, okay. That's Jay Bird. Oh, Uriah Heep at Struthers Fieldhouse. Okay, that's what TJ's talking about. Yeah, Uriah Heep did play at Struthers Fieldhouse. And it was. And the weather was perfect. Monday night, the weather was awesome. And it was just one of those things that I let negative people see. You could probably do, you know, when you do these, you know, your other shows about how negativity can affect you, the negativity
you could have
of others.
Talked to me first. I would have talked you into it. You know,
that's what I needed. Yeah, I needed somebody to say, dude, do you have the money in your wallet? Let's go. Come on. This is a no-brainer.
One time, dude. One time.
And so Jay, he was broke. And then Sandra Miller, she was another one. Oh, I just spent $300 for shoes for my daughter for homecoming. And, you know, and it was just, and I'm like, and then I was falling into that negativity. You know, I got,
I'm like the eight ball, like you shaking. Should I go to this concert? Yeah. And flip it over.
Right.
Yes. Of course.
Right.
You go.
Yeah. So from now on, I'm my own man. I don't let other people influence my decisions like that. And that's what it got me. I didn't see the stones. Yeah. And now I got to go all the way to Detroit in November when I could have been outside, you know, and then it was like, oh, well, we'll have to sit in that 500 section and we're, you have to walk all the way up there in that corner.
Just complaining like crazy.
And it's going to be, and they're going to look this tiny and we're not going to see anybody. And then, oh, and then the traffic, by the time we find a place to park, and then we got to walk all the way there and all the, and the traffic, we're probably not going to get home until 4 a.m. And I'm like, yeah, you know. And then as soon as I
That's what talked you out of it. Couldn't find one good reason to go. So,
you know, I needed somebody to say, dude, I'm outside. I needed somebody sitting in the car outside beeping on the horn.
Right.
Saying, get your ass in here. We got to get rolling. Yep. That's what I needed. I needed somebody to prod me in a positive way. Not everybody had every single reason not to go. Oh, dude. Okay. They said 80, and then you got to go to that $22 service charge. And then, oh, and then we're, you know how high up that is in that 500 section at Heinz Field, dude? It's going to take us 2 days just to walk up there. Oh, and the $18 beers. And we're going to need more than 5 beers. This is, yeah, we don't want to go. Now it's like, all right, we're buying tickets right now and we're going to Detroit.
All that shit went right out the window.
Yeah, yeah. But that was my whole experience there on the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, and back to the Kaufman's buying a concert tickets. I can remember like when you get up to that counter, you just take with the best freaking ticket. You don't care what it costs. You're like, I'm here and I get tickets. I'm going to buy whatever. $170 sold, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, hey, Jaybird. No, the Ford Center is inside. It's inside. It's a dome. It's a dome. As a matter of fact, I was there. You know, we were talking about wrestling. Me and my son went there to his first WrestleMania when The Undertaker came back. And even that, 80,000 people jammed in this, you know, Ford Field. And 80, the ring probably looked like a postage stamp. But everybody was just pumped up. Everybody was pumped up. So yeah, that will be my next thing with the Stones is going no matter what.
No matter what. Nobody, I don't care what they say. Dude.
Nobody's stopping me on this one.
Nope.
That is my plan to get down there.
Jay Bird says he needed to get liquored up to go.
Yeah. Once it, you know, and then I saw everybody even, you know, walking down the street and hanging out and tailgating and everything. Right. And I, you know, it seemed like it made it seem like everybody that I knew was there. Well, I mean the cool people that I know were there.
Right. Let me not put those people who thought the bathrooms are too dirty. And it was
And didn't want to walk there. No. And then, oh, we won't get home until 4 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I do want to see the Stones. You know, unfortunately, and I know this kind of sounds a little morbid, but I mean, like now with the Stones, that might be the last time you see them. Yep. There's a lot of these guys out there.
Right.
I mean, you know, we're all getting older and it bums me out. It really bums me out on a daily basis when you think about, you know, how much longer is like a Paul McCartney going to be on this planet? You know,
right.
All these people that have been a part of our lives for every day for the past 50 years. It's like they're a part of our lives. Tom Petty, you know, when he passed away, I took that really bad, you know, and a lot of other people did too. When these people pass away and then you realize, holy shit, these people are actually a part of my life. You know, right. I just lost a part of my life. And, you know, when you start, you know, when Charlie Watt passed away, you know, when Charlie passed away, and then all of a sudden you're sitting there thinking, wow, these guys are 80 years old. I don't care who you are. You could be the Rolling Stones and you might be like a robot from a different planet or, you know, a Terminator, what do they call those things? And, but you know what? when it's time, it's time.
That's right.
There's only so many miles on these motors, you know?
Yeah. I'm betting Keith Richards lasts till about 100, though. He's got it. <sure.
laughs> Yeah. Or look at Willie Nelson, man. Willie's got to be close to 90 now, right?
Yeah.
He's definitely in his 80s and he's still out there.
Yep.
You know?
Hey, did you get to go to any like racetracks, dirt tracks or anything like that this year?
No, I didn't go to one single race.
I didn't either.
I didn't go to one single race. Not one. Not
it's the
one.
First year I've probably not hit a race.
You know, this was kind of like a weird summer, I think, not just for me. I think for everybody. First of all, it was me getting back into the groove with the new gig at Y103. So there was a lot of adjustment going on with that. And then, you know, even the way some things were canceled and, you know, some people are still a little hesitant about going out there. I mean, it's definitely not back 100%.
Right.
It is definitely not back 100%. I think next year it will be back. But
for sure.
I mean, look how many concerts got canceled this year. You know, somebody in the band had COVID, or some of them, I wonder if they didn't sell enough tickets and they used that for an excuse.
Right.
You know, that could possibly be. So there's a lot of different things out there that I think could have played into it. But it's still not 100%. And there's still some people that are a little worried about going out there. I mean, I don't care what anybody wants to say, or you might be, you know, having the loudest mouth and getting your point of view out there. But I think if you just look at the normal person, like the silent majority or whatever, there's still a lot of people that aren't all gung ho about going out places and stuff.
Yeah. I still don't like being in close proximity with people. I mean, I'm a little weirded out.
You know, when you're out there, you're still thinking, oh yeah, that's another thing, Jay Bird. You forgot to mention COVID. What about COVID at the concert?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to be in. Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. that was probably coming up next. But when he finally talked me out of it, when they both talked me out of it, and they had me like, yeah, you know, and then, I even saw a message on there from Sandra Miller. Yeah, I don't feel bad that I didn't go. And the next day, shit, we should have went. We should have went.
See, they had 29 excuses. If you just had them go to 30, you might have had a chance.
Oh, no. It just kept piling on and piling on and piling on. And it just got into such a negative vibe that it was like, yeah, you know. And I'm like, yeah. I just fell for it. I just got sucked right into that black hole.
Yeah.
And it was just like, when I should have been like, dude, are you crazy? We got to be down there. It's the Stones.
You got to lead the parade, Freddie. You could have taken
Street Fighting Man, yeah. Satisfaction, Jumping Jack Flash, you know.
And they just went riding that train.
No, I learned a valuable lesson on that. I learned a valuable lesson on that one. But what else is going on? We talked a little bit about wrestling. Yeah, that was my big thing, though, this week was not going to the Stones. That was a big mistake that I made. But Detroit Rock City, here we come.
Yeah, Detroit's awesome anyhow. So yeah. Maybe you lucked out. Maybe you'll have the best concert of your life there.
You know, you want to talk about a rock and roll city. Detroit is the rock and roll city. If they would have put the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Detroit, I would have had no problem with that.
Yep.
Because first of all, the home of Motown, number one, right off the bat. And then when you think about how many rockers have come from Detroit and the Detroit area, I mean, it's amazing. Madonna's from Detroit. Eminem is from Detroit.
Right.
Kid Rock is from Detroit. Glenn Frey from the Eagles was from Detroit. You know, and then of course you got all the, you know, Bob Seger, Grand Funk Railroad, Iggy Pop, MC5. Who else? I know I'm forgetting a few. Grand Funk Railroad, Ted Nugent. I mean, Kid Rock. Teddy. The list of Detroit rockers just goes. And they, you know, they were, Youngstown and Detroit are so similar in so many ways. Because, you know, they're both manufacturing towns back in the day. So, you know, we both had that like loud, gritty kind of attitude.
Right.
And I think that's what it showed in the kind of music that we like too. So, you know, at the point in time when, you know, James Taylor and some of those guys were coming out and Bread and everything, people around here, and maybe it had something to do with how loud the factories were and how dirty and gritty the factories were. And, you know, we wanted loud music, you know. That's why Ellis Cooper, when he first came out, one of the first places he caught on, you know, Youngstown, Detroit, Youngstown, Cleveland, you know, just that Buffalo, just that Midwest gritty, you know. I think when I interviewed Ellis Cooper, he said something along the lines of, you know, he goes, we weren't there to babysit you, you know, and they expected you to come out and, you know, screaming guitars and with an attitude,
right.
You know, that's what everybody expected. So, yeah, it was, it had a lot to do with that, but if they would have put the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Detroit, I would have had no problem with that at all.
But I'm glad we got it.
But I love going to Detroit because it's almost like, you know, when you go there and you see all the old buildings and the architecture alone, you look at that city and go, man, if people could only visualize what this city was like when it was the auto capital of the world, you know, with the riches and the wealth that was in that city, you know, and every plant, every factory working like it was in Youngstown and people making money and the prosperity. And you look at it, you know, you just see those ruins and you just sit there and go, man, those are some great heck days. Yeah. What must it have been like for them to build a building like this? Look at this building for them to build that. Look how fancy it is. And boy, for whenever that was built, the 20s, 30s, whenever, and you look at it and go, man, you know, it really says, man, what the Midwest and, you know, what the manufacturing base was. And then you see just like Youngstown, it's all falling apart and it's in disarray and you got the high crime rate, but weed is legal. Recreational weed is legal. That's the first thing Jay Bird said about the Rolling Stones. Oh, yeah, and they got legal recreational weed. It's legal there, you know.
Let's go. We don't care how long the walk is. I don't care how much the ticket is.
I'll park in Lansing and walk down there.
I'll get home at 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't care.
We'll walk through the hood to get to the weed dispensary on the other side to go to the Stones.
Priorities. Totally priorities.
Yeah. Now it's an entirely different story. It's an entirely different story. Yeah, we got to get there. We got to get there. So, yeah, what else is happening? That's kind of like the rock and roll report. Don Felder from the Eagles, formerly of the Eagles, will be at Robin's Theater in Warren on tomorrow night. That's going to be a good show.
I'm happy they're doing something with that place. That place is awesome.
You know, they have a lot of shows booked there. They got Three Dog Night coming, and I hope all these shows are able to sustain themselves. You know, I hope they're not oversaturated because they got a great lineup down there. I mean, for that kind of stuff, they got Blood, Sweat, and Tears coming. They got Three Dog Night. I think they have America, some bands like that. And Don Felder, like I say, I mean, you know, he was with the Eagles for how many years? I mean, he's not like Glenn Frey and Don Henley, but he was a part of it. You know, I mean, that's all his guitar work and stuff. So, you know, for a small hall to see him, and if you're an Eagles fan, I would definitely recommend that show. I think that's going to be great.
I'm going to have to invite the promoter for the Robin's Theater down here to see if we can help get behind some of their shows and help promote a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think every act that they have there could be a podcast for us.
For sure.
I think, you know, every single person. Yeah. And especially doing what we do, when we find guys like, you know, Father Jimmy that had, you know, like the, you know, the Bobby Rydells of the world or whatever, all those guys have so many interesting stories. And I think that it doesn't even almost matter what kind of music they're playing. It's the fact that these guys all have these stories, whether they were playing at the Apollo with James Brown or you're on a tour bus with, you know, the five or six of the other top acts of the time and the Supremes and everything. And you're all just on this bus traveling around the country together and things like that. And I think all these people have these great stories that are still around. And I think it goes beyond, maybe that's what beyond the music, you know.
Ooh, it's beyond the music. Good titling. I love it. You've done this before.
You know, so that's what that I think would be fun. We really should sit down. You know, I'll talk to him when I go there on tomorrow night. But and then what else do we have coming? You know, Packard Music Hall has some great shows coming. They got 38 Special coming there. They have Cheap Trick is going to be at Packard Music Hall. So it's amazing on all the shows. Steve Vai, guitar wizard, guitar slinger, Steve Vai. He's awesome. He's coming to Packard Music Hall in May or in March. And you want to talk about guitar players, you know, he's like one of those guitar players. Right. And he played with David Lee Roth for a while. I think he got his start with Frank Zappa. He played with David Lee Roth band for a while when David Lee Roth solo was on the top of his game. And then he also played with Whitesnake. And he was in that movie Crossroads, one of my favorite movies. You ever see the movie Crossroads? Oh, you got to watch that one. That's an awesome movie. It's about this guy that sold his soul to the devil. You know, it's kind of loosely based on Robert Johnson, bluesman Robert Johnson, who supposedly sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads in exchange for, the ability to play guitar. And he was the first rock star to pass away at the age of 27. Well, he was a blues man. But anyways, so this movie here, it's this old black man and he wants to get his soul back from the devil.
Okay.
And he comes across, you know, this kid that's a really good guitar player. And so they, you know, deal with the devil the whole time. And then it comes down to kind of like the devil went down to Georgia and they're going to have the big contest. And so they got this, the kid, and you know, he's just like this clean cut, you know, straight laced kid that knows how to play guitar. Mm. And then the devil has Steve Vai as his, like, you know, and he's like, you know, just this typical rock star and stuff, badass axe slinger. And so they do have the big showdown. And I don't know if I'm getting spoiler.
Yeah. Don't give me a spoiler.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. But you know, you can imagine what happens.
Yeah.
There.
Right.
I mean, I don't have to tell you, but, and Steve Vai is in that. And that's a great movie. And one time we had lunch with Steve Vai at a Chinese restaurant and he was a nice guy and just to hang out with and stuff. We went riding around in a limo with him and everything. It was like, wow.
How'd you hook that up? Is that a radio station thing?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now this was years ago too, but it was just, it was cool to hear his stories talking about Frank Zappa and David Lee Roth and all that kind of stuff. So that was a lot of fun, but that's going to be a great show.
I'm surprised you haven't written a rock and roll book yet.
Yeah.
Is that in your future? You're going to write something? You think
maybe so? Everybody tells me I should.
Yeah.
And then Joe Bonamassa, bluesman Joe Bonamassa, is going to be down at the Covelli Center. That's going to be another good show. Not everybody knows who like Steve Vai is or Joe Bonamassa, but Joe Bonamassa, you know, he's a blues man in the vein of Eric Clapton and Led Zeppelin and that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, he's not like traditional twangy blues or whatever. I mean, he's like blues rock. He's okay. More blues rock than blues. I guess some people said the difference between blues and blues rock is the number of notes. They say a blues man can get it across in just a few notes. Mm. And a blues rock, you got a whole lot more notes.
A little more.
Yeah, you know, you got more notes. But you know, he's played with Eric Clapton, and actually he got his start. Well, not his start, but when he was starting out, he used to play at the Cellar in downtown Struthers. And him and Cornell Bogdan used to go out and visit schools when he was in town to talk about blues and music history. So they would go to some schools and they have a music class. And, you know, Joe would bring his guitar and they would talk about different styles of music and how the blues influence rock and roll. But, you know, that's where he was, you know, playing at the Cellar in Struthers. And now, you know, he could fill the Covelli Center. And some people don't know him. They're not really sure what he's all about. But if you like Led Zeppelin and that kind of stuff and Eric Clapton, you'll like Joe Bonamassa. I mean,
it's weird how the small city of Struthers becomes a hub for rock and roll. You know,
that's so crazy to me. Well, there was some good shows down at the Cellar too, yeah. You know, back in the day. And that's how Eric Ryan got started, by booking his shows down here in the Cellar in downtown Struthers. Yeah. And I mean, he got one of those loans to revitalize the building. And from there, he revitalized it, started a business, started booking bands down there, was successful, moved up, bigger shows. And now, you know, he's got the Covelli Center and Packard Music Hall, and also helps with other shows, you know, consultants and stuff. So
we got a talent,
you know, It's
raised right here.
You know, and he started out as working in the mill.
Yeah.
You know, and just had this vision and saw it through. And I'll tell you, he's made a big difference in Youngstown.
Absolutely.
We're coming up on the anniversary of the Covelli Center here. I was thinking of that the other day. Surprisingly, the bands that have played at the Covelli Center in, say, the last 10 years, they, let's see. I was thinking of this the other day. ZZ Top, John Mellencamp, Def Leppard, Kiss, Guns N' Roses, Rod Stewart, Stevie Nicks, John Mellencamp, Def Leppard, REO Speedwagon, Styx, Willie Nelson, Bob Dylan, then some of the harder bands that have, you know, Judas Priest, and then, I mean, like the newer, harder bands, you know, that are out there. You know, I know Volbeat, bands along, you know, the harder bands, and Papa Roach and all those bands. I'll tell you, there's been a lot of great bands that have played at the Covelli Center. Surprisingly, you know, Motley Crue played there. Yeah, I said Def Leppard, REO Speedwagon, Styx. I went through those, but there's about, you know, 17, 18 really, you know, top tier bands. And that's what I really like about this. You know, even at the Youngstown Amphitheater to see Ellis Cooper, I had to work, so I didn't get there until Ellis had already started. But I just had to come from Midlothian to downtown to the show, so that made it convenient for me. And then when you're done, you're home in 20 minutes. You're home in a half hour. Yep. It is so great. You know, if you went to Blossom to see that same show, you'd be getting home at whatever time.
That's right.
And down here, you just park there and boom, man, you get in your car. The next thing you're home, or you could stop at the Royal Oaks or whatever, grab another drink or two, and then go home.
And literally we are two blocks from the Covelli Center, guys. We could freaking walk there from right. where we're at right now.
Right. And I just think that that's just a great asset to downtown Youngstown.
Do you remember how hard they fought that shit when Jim Trafficant was pushing on that?
I'll tell you one guy that definitely was against it was Harry Michelle. I remember Harry Michelle when he was like the state senator or whatever. He was fighting Trafficant tooth and nail about that. What are we going to do with this place? Between that and the amphitheater, that is like the keystone of downtown Youngstown. Now you get people that will come from Pittsburgh. You'll get people that will come from Cleveland, from Akron, from Ashtabula, from Erie. They'll come down here to see these shows. You know, when I, you know, broadcast from outside the show, you know, before the show or whatever, you're always seeing people from all over the place that come down here now. You know, if they like the band, if they're a fan and they follow it, they're going to come down here.
Bring money into town. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, maybe it's just, you know, McDonald's and a tank of gas, but
I'll take it. Bring it up.
Right, right. You know, the one thing I do think is some of these places, though, in downtown, I think they kind of miss the boat by not bending whatever the format of their place is on nights when they have those shows. You know, I think if they have like the hip hop or whatever, I think they stick to what they do. Or if they're a younger crowd. And I think sometimes they miss the boat on some of these older people that come in that follow the classic rock that would like to have a place to go and have a drink and maybe hear a classic rock band or something instead of a thumping DJ or something along those lines. And I think sometimes they miss the boat on that, but I don't know.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that'll ever return. I mean, cause that I would like to see that as well. A little bit of competition, different genres.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least for those nights, you know, but then again, if that's your Saturday night, I don't think you're going to mess with it, you know?
Yeah. With Jay Bird, it's 9:30. I got to get home. Sorry.
Yeah.
Jay, there you go. I had to.
Yeah. Avenged Sevenfold, Buck Cherry, bands like that. Shinedown was the first band to play there. Well, Three Doors Down was the first headliner at the Covelli Center.
I did not know that.
It was Alter Bridge, Shinedown, and Three Doors Down when they first come out with Kryptonite and everything. That was the very first show that they did, very first rock show.
Very cool.
And then I think the very first sellout there was with the Steel Hounds Hockey. That's a missed opportunity there too. When the Steel Hounds were here, if people don't think that Youngstown's a hockey town, you're sadly mistaken.
Absolutely.
Because Youngstown is a hockey town. And when they had the Steel Hounds, they had the right mix on that team of guys that played in the NHL and that were on their way down and maybe trying to hold on to something or just to be a part of it. And you had up and coming guys that were young. And I mean, they just had the right blend of players at the right level in their career to make it fun. And, you know,
whatever happened to them? I know they left, but
if I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong on this, but it was like, the league that they were in, and somebody could correct me on this if you want. And this is,
I'm going to look it up while you're talking too.
But the league that the Steel Hounds were in was somehow owned by the people who were running the Covelli Center, the Youngstown Convocation Center at the time. So for them to, it was part of their contract. If they were going to run the arena, that their hockey team, that the hockey team had to be in their league. And they were playing teams like in Oklahoma and Omaha and just crazy Texas, where they should have been playing teams in Wheeling. They should have been playing Erie. They should have been in that league. But
okay.
These guys somehow owned the league or were part of the league. And they were running some of these different arenas throughout the country. And so they got lumped in with that. Okay. So the Steel Hounds, they would have to play, all different places. Yeah, the CHL.
After being kicked out of the league and failing to quickly find a new league, there was a mass exodus of top officials.
And you see what it says? The Steel Hounds in the league had a dispute related to travel expenses since the franchise began in 2006. And that's because they had to play. See, well, it says right there, they should have been in the IHL or the ECHL, and that would have saved that team. And I mean, they had some excellent players. They had a big following, and they actually sold that place out. They sold it out. There have been more than one, but yeah, that's what happened right there. So that's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I had a Steel Hounds jersey, and I had a Youngstown Pride jersey, and both of my teams went out of town.
Yeah, no, the Steel Hounds could have stuck around, man. And I mean, and they were very involved in the community. And I remember we would do nights out with the team. And we would be at different places like Magic Tree and Draft House and stuff. They used to hang out at the Draft House. That was like their main thing. But we would go down there and we would do autograph sessions and stuff. And we would pack the place. You know, people would come out. Dad would have a couple of beers. The kids would get, you know, posters and pucks signed and everything. And there was a lot of excitement for that. And unfortunately, they just got in that stupid league through some sort of politics, and that just killed them. They couldn't keep, you know,
priced them out of it.
They couldn't just keep traveling, you know, they'd go to, you know, San Antonio, Texas from Youngstown.
Right.
And then they'd go to Omaha, and then they would wherever the places were. And there was nothing close around here. They were all out in the Midwest somewhere, where if they would have played, you know, Erie Otters and, you know, the Wheeling Nailers, if they would have been in that, it would have been off the hook, because you would have had these rivalries too. And you would have had fans coming from Wheeling to Youngstown. You would have had fans coming from Erie to Youngstown, and vice versa. You'd have people from Youngstown going down the Wheeling. You would have them, you know, when the Phantoms first started, they had that going pretty good. They really had a pretty good fan base, but you know, that's still a lower tier. It's still a lower tier.
It's fun to watch, but you're right. It's,
you know, I mean, and nothing against the people, the players or whatever, but it's not an arena size. You know, I mean, let's face it. Yeah. Have some of these guys gone on to the NHL and even played for the Stanley Cup? Yes, but they're way down on the ladder before they get there. Yeah. Does the road to the NHL start in Youngstown? Is that a valid thing to say? Yeah, of course it is. But it's a long road where, you know, with the Steel Hounds, you had people that were in the NHL that were moving up, other guys, you know, they were just old and they were just hanging on or whatever. So it was a good mix of players and, you know, it was real hockey. It was real hockey, yep. You know,
in this area, that's two things that surprised me is how big the following was for hockey and country music. I had no idea how many people were fans in this area.
Oh man. Country music, especially.
Yep. Yeah. Right.
You know, I was just, we were talking about that not too long ago about, Ponderosa Park. And that used to be the mecca for country music around here down in Salem. And I was looking at one of their schedules, you know, pull up, just look at like a Ponderosa Park schedule from say 1977. They used to have a schedule that would start.
What year did you say?
Let's say 1977. Let's see if they have one on that. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Ponderosa Park. Let's see their schedule from 1977. Willie Nelson, how many times? See that? Oh, there we go. September 16th, 1989. That is the first and only rock show they ever did there. And we put it on with Joan Jett, The Urge, Noisy Mama, and the band Boo Koo. And after they saw the rock and roll crew that showed up for that, they never had another one again. But Ponderosa Park, they had Billy Ray Cyrus. When was that? 2001. Is that how long ago Billy Ray Cyrus was? 2001? Achy Breaky Heart? Okay. Yeah, look at that. Glenn Campbell, Johnny Cash, George Jones. And this was week after week after week after week. Kenny Rogers, the Oak Ridge Boys. They would do this year after year. Week after week, Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash, George Jones, Willie Nelson, you know, Bobby Bear, you know, Merle Haggard, George Jones, Tammy Wynette, the Judds. I met the Judds down there. I used to like the Judds. The mom was hot. I really liked the mom better than the daughter. You know, Barbara Mandrell, the Oak Ridge Boys. And they would just do this week after week, year after year. If you, and going back to the 70s. Up until, well, you know, whenever that, you know, what, 1989, maybe 1990, which to me, 1990 doesn't seem like that long ago. To me, 1990 does not seem like.
No. 30 years ago?
Yeah. Doesn't feel that way? It doesn't quite seem that long ago.
What about Jamboree in the Hills?
Jamboree in the Hills. I used to love that. That used to be the greatest time. Jamboree in the Hills was called the Super Bowl of country music, and it took place down in St. Clairsville outside of Wheeling. And it was really something, especially back in the day before it became like this big commercial thing. And I think the commercialism really killed it, honestly. And it was like this kind of like this secret, but it was like the craziest 3-day party that you would find anywhere. And, you know, they had camping, you were allowed to bring your own beer in. And it was like, it was the Super Bowl of country music. It would go on for 3 days and it was everybody that Eddie Rabbit, Glenn Campbell, the Oak Ridge Boys, Charlie Daniels, Merle Haggard, Loretta Lynn, Crystal Gayle, Tanya Tucker, Charlie Daniels, Hank Williams Jr. It was everybody. And it was just like this cool vibe because everybody would be there. And the big thing was people used to have these customized carts, like these wagons and stuff, where you would just strap your cooler and your lawn chairs and everything on, and you would just roll in there and it was off to the races. And I used to go there all the time. Me and Gary Z through WNIO, we would get backstage, all access backstage passes. And we would sit down there and all these guys, Mickey Gilley, everybody, they would all come in this tent, and every single performer that came there came into the tent with all the radio people and all the newspaper people. And they would do little press conferences and things like that and sign autographs and cut station promos. And the people were so nice. And it was just like this big community party where, you know, somebody would just be sitting there and they would have the biggest jar of moonshine soaked cherries you've ever seen. And you walk by and then reach in there with a cup and scoop just hand out. You a cup. And, you know, somebody would be sitting there and they just pour shots for everybody. And, you know, I mean, you couldn't walk anywhere without somebody tossing you a beer or something, liquor. You know? And so we would go down there and we, you know, we would interview all the stars and, you know, we were kind of like big shots down there. And it was just the way they had this whole thing all laid out. And the one day, though, it was really funny. Me and Gary Z are down there. And, you know, you know, they had the press tent. So me and him go in there and we're liquored up. We're like three sheets to the wind. You might not know this, you know, we've been there for a couple of days already, you know. And so we go out there. And I go up and I'm sitting at the table on the other side of the table. You know, I got the big Jamboree in the Hills and banner and everything for the setup for the press conference. So I'm just sitting there and he starts asking me questions.
Oh, no.
And it's just me and him at first, you know, and all of a sudden you see people looking, going, oh, they're doing an interview in there. We better go over there. You know, they don't even know who it is, right? You know, these people just come in there and they're starting, they set their tape recorder up there. They don't want to miss whatever's going on there. Right. Then next thing you know, you see somebody in the back with a, you know, this was still pen and paper, right? Jotting down notes, you know, and they're sitting there and, you know, and I'm just going on and he's asking me questions and, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, we really love coming down in this area. And it's so great to be along the Ohio River. Reminds me of back home. And yeah, you know, I come down there and it makes me, it's so inspirational and I want to write some songs and I've been working on a few just from being down here this weekend.
So you hooked a man, you're pulling. I love it.
The next thing you know, here comes a security guard with his arms crossed and doesn't find it amusing and kicks me out of the chair. Right? The people that were sitting there that fell for this are looking at me like, you dick, you dick. You know? Like, hey, gotcha.
That's what you do. What you do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But Jamboree in the Hills, man, that used to be. But then it really got commercial after that. And then they just started trying to milk you for every little thing and charge you for every little thing. And then I think at one point they said, okay, no more beer allowed in. And I think when that went down, and they really killed it. Corporate America killed Jamboree in the Hills. They had that thing. It was the coolest party. And I liked it when it was more underground, you know, when not everybody knew about it.
Right.
But, you know, a few times I went there on a bus afterwards, you know, and I mean, I've always had a great time there, but the corporate America killed Jamboree in the Hills. They just made it too. Oh, we can't let people bring beer in here. Well, look how much money we're losing. We're losing on this. Oh, they can't do that. No, wait a minute. How much are we charging on the port of tent up there? No. We should be getting three times that much. You know, you could just see, you could see how the man stuck it to everybody.
Yep.
You know, but that used to be one of the coolest parties of all times. And like I say, when I had, you know, full backstage VIP, it was really awesome. It was great. And me and Gary Z were always the last two people to leave. We were always the last two people to leave there. We would be staggering out like the last survivors, you know,
only because they made
like,
you.
Yeah. Like, holy shit. We get our asses kicked in there, man. You know, we come staggering out with, you know, with all our gear and our tape recorders and microphones and, you know, our backpacks. And we're just coming out. What the heck happened?
Get back to the station. Like, what'd you get? We're hungover and I got kicked out.
Yeah. Other than that, and you're probably going to be getting a phone call on Monday, but we'll handle it. We can explain. It's not what they said. It didn't quite happen that way.
That's my side of the story. Yeah. I got a story.
Yeah. We'll give you the whole story, but don't listen to what they said because they got it all screwed up. That's not what happened.
Jay Bird said you have to mention Nelson Ledges as well.
Oh, yeah. Nelson Ledges, that's another one. I didn't really get a chance to go do a lot of stuff at Nelson Ledges. You know, you got to be pot smoking, LSD tripping, mushroom eating, burned out hippie to go to Nelson Ledges. Okay. And that's the good part about it, though. I'm not saying that like it's a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, that was those were some good times though, Jamboree in the Hills. I got a lot of pictures from that laying around. As a matter of fact, I do have a picture of me at that press conference sitting there.
And, bring it next time. I'll throw it up on the screen.
Yeah, it was it was really pretty funny. But you know what was the thing was though, even though we were down there like partying our asses off, we always got all kinds of good interviews and everything. We always, you know, got the job done though, you know, and still had so much fun. So much fun. Yeah, like this one time we're down there and everybody used to hang out in this. There was like a truck stop parking lot there. And everybody would hang out there after the show if you didn't have camping or whatever. So we're down there and there's these girls and they invite us over to this party. Hey, we got a party going on. So we go over to the party. Next thing you know, these dudes come over and they're not too happy with us being there. Not that there was anything going on, you know, but they just didn't like the fact that we were at this party. So we're like in this back roads, west by God, you know, and the house was up on the side of a hill. And the house was like in the middle of nowhere up on the side of this hill. So, you know, these guys come in, you know, you guys got to go. Get the hell out of here. You know, what are you doing here or whatever? We don't know you. What are you, you know, doing here? So we're like, I think we better get moving here.
Right.
You know, they're like, oh, dude, we're just here to crash for a little bit. You go crash somewhere else. Get the hell out of here. Nobody invited you and that kind of stuff. So we're on this hill and it's like a valley. So we're on this hill, right? We go flying down the driveway. We go across the road and up the other side. And there's a wire, you know, across the gate, a wire gate. We go right under that. And we had a CB radio at the time, too. We go under the wire. There's a scratch that goes on my buddy's car from the trunk. You know, we went up there and I think we went down backwards and then we went up there and it ripped the CB antenna off the roof. It was on a magnet and there's this big stripe now all the way up across the car from where the wire just scraped across the thing.
Wow.
He just pulls the thing. He had a stick shift. He just pulls it in park and we just crash. We didn't even move. We could still see the party at the house across the street and stuff, you know. Next thing you know, the sun's coming up. We're extremely hungover, and it just seemed like it was 90 degrees and humid in this car. And the next thing you know, you're boom, boom. We get up, and I got a picture of this. We are in a blasting zone at a strip mine.
Oh my God.
The first thing we hear, boom. It's like, what the hell is this? You know, I look out the window and go, dude, we got to get out of here. This is a blasting zone. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, we're blasted. So I guess this is the place to be. So then we go back down to the Jamboree and finish polishing off whatever bottle of Jack was left. And,
you know, that stripe on the paint job, that was a warning sign that said, if you cross here, you're going to get blown up.
Yeah, right. Oh, and them guys, they were just like so pissed. They come in there like, you know, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh man, we're somewhere here in the woods of West Virginia. If any, you know, nobody ever find us,
nope,
you know,
nope.
We would be at the bottom of that strip mining pit.
Never find you.
but that was something. And then off we went. There's just all kind of craziness going on there. But it was always a good time. Jamboree in the Hills. Super Bowl of country music. In its heyday, 70s, 80s, early 80s, it was nothing like it. But yeah, until they decided to just commercialize every last little thing. I remember another time me and my buddy Chuck Sullivan, who used to own Sully's, we got on the bus with Cat Country at the time, with John Thomas and whoever else was on Cat Country, and they had a couple of extra tickets. They said, hey, you want to go on our party bus, the Jamboree in the Hills? This was after, you know, I was out of the country thing. I said, heck yeah, man. So me and Sully go down there. And at one point, I mean, that day, it was like we were getting the perfect buzz on. This day was like the perfect buzz. It was just like, you know, everything we drank just slowly went to the next level. And it was just like rolling, you know. I guess maybe if you go party with a bartender. And we started the day with UConn Jack. We started the day with UConn, you know, because UConn, if you want something early in the morning, UConn Jack is the way to go. So we started with that, and then it was a couple of beers, then it was some moonshine cherries, and the day just progressed on. And it's like, so the next thing you know, we run into this guy, we were calling him Super Billy. And Super Billy is there in like a Speedo. He almost looked like the naked cowboy from Times Square. So it's Super Billy, and he's got like a rebel flag on as a cape. And he's got like one of them red, white, and blue Toby Keith cowboy hats. And he's wearing a Speedo and cowboy boots. And then he's with these two drop dead, knockout, gorgeous women. And they're in bikinis. They're in red, white, and blue, or might even been rebel flag bikinis, right? And cowboy boots. And the one's a little older than the other, and they were kind of like, oh yeah, mother, daughter, or something like that. And you know, they're making out with each other and stuff. Next thing you know, they said, come on with us. Before you know it, me, Sully, and them three are right in the very front row. And people are just handing us drinks and everything. And it was like, how the heck did we team up with them? And we were in the very, very front row of Jamboree and the Hills.
Wow. See, I thought this was going to be a porn plot. I thought you were setting me up.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. I think at some point that did cross, you know, that did enter into the, right. You know, into the scenario.
That's a different story.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, yeah, they're, you know, and then like the little house on the side of the mountain in the middle of the woods, you know, it just doesn't pan out that way. You know? Then another day we get down there and we're the last two to leave, right? And we come out, and there's some guy sleeping on the hood of the car. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? They're like, hey, dude, you got to go, man. We got to leave. Turns out the guy saw the sticker on our license plate that we were from the Youngstown area, and his friends left them, and he needed a ride home.
No kidding. Did you give him a ride home?
Yeah, and he stole wallet.
Are you shitting me? You gave a stranger a ride home and he stole your wallet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, what were you gonna do? You know, I mean,
leave his ass there.
Well, if it was me, I'd want a ride, you know.
Yeah, that's before Ubers. Like, I'd tell him to go get an Uber today.
Yeah, I think 1981.
Yeah, that's probably, the Uber no, wasn't. No Ubers.
Yeah, the Uber wasn't really that big at the time. That's another thing I heard some people talking about. It might have even been on the radio. It might have been Steve Gorman last night on the radio, but they're talking about how hitchhiking was big back in the day. Well, remember when we had Jack, the Youngstown rock and roll historian.
Yes, right.
Jack Riblett, and he was talking about all his adventures of hitchhiking.
Right.
Back in the day, people used to do that. I mean, nowadays, you couldn't do that at all. I wouldn't chance that in a million years. Plus, I don't think because you have to figure, first of all, if somebody's going to pick you up, chances are they're probably as sinister as that you would probably think you would appear to be.
Yeah. Well, you see those guys all the time at their interstates off to the side saying you need to ride somewhere. And I never see anybody picking them up, but it has to happen.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure somebody picks them up.
Trucker or something like that.
Somebody's probably as goofy as them.
Yeah.
Hey, get in. murdered in a field somewhere. Now it's really going to get weird. But yeah, back in the day, though, you know, people used to hitchhike all the time and not think anything of it. Well, look at that. Well, Jack, remember he said they hitchhiked to a show in Cincinnati? Or was it in Detroit? Or was it in Cincinnati? And they hitchhiked to the show. And Steve Bader's was there. And he was like pouring peanut butter on Iggy Pop or something? Remember that story?
I did, yeah.
I can't exactly remember what happened there. But they hitchhiked to a show. And then there was Steve Bader's was there. And he was doing something with Iggy Pop, and he was just in the crowd at the time.
Wow.
What? We'll have to go back in the archives and look up that story. I can't remember what that was, because I even asked him, I said, wait a minute, you hitchhiked down there and they got there some other way and you saw him there and he was doing whatever he was doing.
Peanut butter or something. Wow.
Yeah. I can't remember what it was. It was something really crazy.
Yep.
But yeah, hitchhiking, that used to be another thing, man. People would just want to go to some concert somewhere or whatever.
Stick out the thumb.
And here we go.
Yep.
Well, and it was usually other burnouts or something that were going there anyways. So, you know, but yeah, we got to get Jack back on. He's got a lot of hitchhiking stories. We might have to do a whole show one day of hitchhiking. Well, the old hippies are still around and can still remember the days of hitchhiking to Woodstock or wherever else, you know, some big show in Cincinnati or whatever. Yeah, we'll be getting back to that. What do you think? Time to wrap things up?
Sure.
Yeah, we're about done now. That was a good show, but just for sitting here shooting the breeze and reminiscing and all that kind of stuff. So,
what's coming up
next week? 1 week from today, a radio extravaganza. It will be our buddy Basil, comedian Basil.
Nice.
And then I also have a couple of bands that have a couple of benefits coming up this weekend, next weekend. I want to let them, you know, give them a little plug on that too. If we could squeeze them in there somewhere with Basil, it's going to have to
that'd be hilarious.
We'll get them in there one way or another to promote their, shows. So,
all right.
Other than that, I think we're done. I have nothing else to say. I'll catch you tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock on Y103, and I will continue talking. I'll play a lot more music there, though. We can't play music here, so I have nothing to hide behind. I just have to keep going, folks. Yep. So anyways, thanks everybody for tuning in. And next week, like I say, we will have the one and only Basil, and I guarantee you that you'll be laughing. Your cheeks will be hurting you. I don't know which cheeks, but
I don't know.
he is Greek, so I don't know what might happen there. But yeah, we'll have Basil in here next week. Sandra Miller, my new cohort partner in crime on Y103, will be here, and we'll definitely have some fun.
All right, peace out.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.